good evening.
Happy Shabbat to everyone. Welcome to Yada Yah Radio. My pleasure to be with you. Looks like we have Larry with us. How are you, Larry?
I'm good. I've been out slumming today, but I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. Well, that's good. Any arguments today?
I ran out of fingers. Yeah, I mean, you know, I just had it out with some Paulettes,
okay.
A couple of them actually. One of them told me that Paul is just misunderstood. And I said, so when he wants to castrate everybody that's being circumcised, that's just a giant mistake, the word castrated there. I showed it to him. So
yep.
Now if you can show me anything older than that, I might believe you. But since there isn't anything older on the planet than okay. P46 of Mr. Paul, then, you know,
yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah, Paul is clearly misunderstood. That's why he's an inspired spokesperson from God, because God's a really crappy communicator. Is that what
yeah,
you think?
Because, yeah, and you know, Yahweh often engaged clergy to do speaking on his behalf, as we all know.
He did, huh? I must have missed that part.
Yeah.
When did that occur? You know, this first
Never.
Statement in the 119th Psalm, the 118th verse is where we are now, speaks to almost everything that's been shared in the chat room. One person actually said that their pastor called them the spirit of the Antichrist.
And there, too. I know him.
Yeah, as if there were a Christ. Oops, there's no
yep.
Christ. Yep, and there is no term in Scripture even remotely akin to an Antichrist. There is a Torahless one, but you can see why, from a Christian point of view, they don't want to present Satan, the beast, and the false prophet as the Torahless one. That would identify one of them as the negative adversarial influence. This is the statement, 118 verse, 119th Psalm. It is consistent with God's overall point of view regarding those who are misled by religion. This is Dode speaking to Yahweh, having come to know Yahweh's position on the issue of rejection. He says, you reject. This is Salah. You literally and totally repudiate the notion of having a relationship with. This is in the call perfect, which means it is. This is genuine. There's no wiggle room here. This needs to be interpreted literally. And in the perfect, this concept is completely accurate, completely manifest in Yah's testimony. No dangling participles here. You reject everyone who allows themselves to be misled and thereby strays. That would be a considerable group of people. You reject, you totally repudiate the notion of having a relationship with everyone and anyone who allows themselves to be misled and thereby strays from your clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live, from your choke, which are those inscribed instructions that cut us into the relationship. For indeed, deception becomes their treacherous delusion. That's probably as blunt and as effective as any statement you'll find in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms regarding Yahweh's reaction to the gray area. For those that say, okay, you know, I don't have the five terms and conditions of the covenant down. Maybe I don't attend the mikre. Maybe I have never read the Torah. Maybe I don't know Yahweh's name, but I have a good heart, and God knows my heart, and He will respond to any old name when you have a good heart. Well, here's Yahweh's response. He rejects everyone and anyone who allows themselves to stray from his clearly communicated, inscribed means to be cut into the relationship. For indeed, deception becomes their treacherous delusion. There is no place in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and no place in Yahweh's testimony, no place in Yahusha's testimony, where God has a gray area of compromise, where he's saying, okay, yes, I delineated the terms and conditions of the covenant. Yes, I delineated a path that was supposed to be observed on certain days in a certain way that comprises seven celebrations of life with me. But, you know, all of that stuff, it's really not all of it. I don't even know why I bothered with it, because I really don't care. Any old way ought to be fine with me. I love all the little children, and so it really doesn't matter. I don't recall him ever saying that.
No, but I had one of them that's unknown tell me, God loves you anyway.
Oh, well. Yes, he does.
Wow.
He does love me because he knows me.
Anyway.
And it's because I know him.
I told him, I said, coming from a person like you that's unknown, that just doesn't amount to much. That's what
yeah.
I told him.
There you go.
You
God
know,
doesn't, can't compromise, doesn't compromise. There is a singular pact to him. There's one covenant. There's not two. There's no new covenant. There's no New Testament. There's no gospel of grace. There's no religion.
No gospel of gratia, huh?
No.
No authorized book named after the sun goddess Biblio?
No. There are choke, which are inscribed prescriptions that cut us into the relationship. That's the way. To Yahweh, and if you have chosen, as most have done, to believe that which is untrue, you know, the excuse when you get to the time of judgment that I was misled, it's not fair. When it says that the lie was your treacherous delusion, I'm sorry, it doesn't matter, does it?
When he
says, okay, give me a second chance, God says, no, I'm going to reject everyone who strays from my inscribed prescriptions on how to be cut into the relationship.
That's only fair.
Clear, fair, appropriate. And if God said otherwise, then he wouldn't be trustworthy. I mean, what would the purpose be of engaging in the covenant according to its terms and walking down the path and celebrating the seven Moed Mikre, and of listening to the instructions in the Torah? What would be the purpose of that if God didn't care? If any old way would work, why even bother with any? Why did Yahusha bother to become the Passover lamb? Why did Yahusha's soul go to Sheol to remove the fungus of sin from our souls? Why did he bother to do those things if any old way will matter? Works.
You know, that's really the crux of the matter, because when you start thinking about that, I mean, really thinking about that.
Yes.
How would you like to know you were about to be nailed to an upright pole after you were beaten? And knowing it. I mean, knowing it. No way out of it. I mean, this is what you're going to be doing. And then to have people say, well, really, I don't care to listen to you. I'd rather listen to Paul, or I'd rather listen to religious delusion or religious tradition, all one and the same thing. You know, I told somebody this week, I said, you know, I'm my surname is Hendricks. And when I told people I was a member of the Hendricks household, they didn't say, oh, what religion is that? You know, and you need to stop doing that with Yahweh, because, you know, there are no Abrahamic religions. There is a religious delusion trying to attach to Abraham and Yahweh.
Three of them.
But,
three of them.
Yeah. Sorry, it didn't happen because he was not a religious initiate. And until people can come to grips, with the fact that Yahweh hates religion, won't have any religious imagery, can't stand religious veneration, as his people are upright, you know, and he wants a real relationship, not some fraudulent, ass-kissing type of religious venerated worship service. until they can come to that, I don't feel sorry for any of them.
No, it is their
and
treacherous.
I don't feel sorry for the people who don't listen to them. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
They're treacherous.
I don't care if they're my own kids. I don't feel sorry.
If Yahweh didn't reject everyone who wasn't mindful of his clearly communicated and inscribed prescriptions for living as they're cut into his
he'd be a liar.
then you have to ask, why did the Exodus, the freedom from religion and from economic ruin and from politics in Egypt begin with Passover? Why was Passover celebrated by Yahweh and Abraham at the commencement of the covenant? Why did Yahusha agree to become the Passover lamb? Why was he predicted to become the Passover lamb? Why did he allow himself, his physical body, to be tortured in this way if Passover, the doorway to life, was irrelevant? Why would he expose his soul to Sheol? Why would he speak of matzah? Why would he make matzah part of the Exodus, part of the freedom of his people, the process of being prepared to enter the promised land, if it did not matter? If any old way would work, why bother with the way that he delineated in his Torah and that he lived out in human history in year 4000 Yah?
These points all speak to themselves, don't they? And
they
so
do.
If anybody wants to just belittle that and run with man's tradition, Easter bunnies and Santa Clauses, and the Sunday worship of the Lord, have at it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and the question you would have to ask the Christian is, if any old way works, if God's not going to reject those who have shown allegiance to a different way, then why did Yahusha serve as the Passover lamb? Why bother? You know, if you're going to start a new religion unaffiliated with the instructions in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, different than the path that Yahweh has provided there, why on earth would Yahusha be the Passover lamb? Why would he be missing from the land of the living on matzah? You know, what's
yeah,
the
many of them even call him the lamb. Christians will even call him the lamb. They
right.
really will.
Yeah, they know it. They know that he was the lamb. They know he was even the sacrificial lamb of Yahshua 53. But the question is, if Passover is irrelevant, why did he serve as the Passover lamb? Why subject himself to that?
Well, these are some tough questions they'll have to answer, I suppose. I mean, what it comes down to is, you know, Yahweh is looking for people that make connections. I listened to what you were saying there about making connections, and that's what he's looking for. He doesn't want to be around a bunch of retarded, imbecilic boobs that fall for every little trick in the book. I don't either.
Well, let's
Those aren't
say
people
that,
I surround myself with.
Let's say there's a group of people on one side of a chasm. And you volunteer to sacrifice yourself at great personal pain to endure certain death to provide a way across that chasm. And you tell people, I'm doing this for you. And everybody on the side of that chasm says, no, thank you. We'll find our own way. Good luck with what you're doing there. We're going to name our religion after you, by the way. But we're going to go find a different way.
And then we're going to change your name in the process.
Oh, yeah. Then, by the way, we'll change your name because we don't really like that name because we really don't like your chosen people. We don't like your promised land. And, matter of fact, it's kind of weird that we would want to go to heaven because we don't like your promised land and we don't like your name and we don't like your people. When we really don't
right.
like your covenant because we came up with a whole different covenant, so we don't like that either. We don't like your instructions
And we can speak Greek, but we can't speak Hebrew. So we can say Hesus Jesus all day long, but we can't say Yahusha. Somehow our mouths don't work to say that. We can't say Yahweh, but we can say Lord Baal's name all day long.
Guess what? You can't even say Jesus in in Greek. You can't say Jesus in Greek.
Yeah,
you can't
I know
say Jesus in Latin. You can't say Jesus in any of those languages. Well, the fact is that for the religious, this passage is the quid pro quo of the Torah. Reject Yahweh's provisions, and he will reject you. It's as simple as that. It's this clear-cut. It's this uncompromising. It's this unequivocal. And it has to be that way. There, Yahweh loses all credibility, and he becomes an absolute fool if his way doesn't matter. There is no way that he would suffer personally the indignity of Sheol and the pain of Passover. He wouldn't live through it with his people in their exodus from Egypt. He wouldn't have provided the Passover lamb with Abraham on Mount Moriah. None of that would have happened, nor would he have revealed through his prophets what he was going to do and why, if it didn't matter. It makes God an idiot. If it doesn't matter, it makes him just a person who blabbers on about nonsense. If it doesn't matter. I mean, that's really what you're saying. If you're saying, no, my way, my religious way, Paul's way, any other way, is just as good. It says that everything God has said and done doesn't matter. And then, if that's the case, then God's a bumbling, incompetent fool. That's your God? Well, you know, enjoy your time with him. It's not the one that created the universe. Now, as we know, the choke is comprised of five specific things. There's five things that we're asked to do if we want to be part of the covenant family. And the first of those things is to walk away from our country, walk away from the country of Babylon, which is religion and politics, walk away from Mitzrayim, the crucible, which is a blend of politics and religion. And if we don't leave those economic schemes and that militarism and that patriotism, then we're not welcome in God's family. There will be no signs in heaven that say support our troops. There will be no God Bless America ever sung in heaven. There will be no Onward Christian Soldiers. There will be, never will the hymn be uttered, Amazing Grace. There will be no mention of a Jesus or a Jesus Christ. You will never hear the title or name Lord, ever. And so, you know, if you're not willing to disassociate from those things, then you're not welcome. That's a prerequisite. And from there, the next thing we're asked to do is to trust and rely on Yahweh completely and totally. And that would mean on his plan. We're asked to walk to him and become perfect, which we can do when we follow his path, his way, his example. Just walk right down the same path that he did. And from there, he asks us to come to observe, closely examine, and carefully consider the terms of the covenant, which is what this statement is all about. And if, as parents, we want to participate in the covenant, as men, we must be circumcised, and we're asked as parents to circumcise our children. That's it. And there are seven steps along the path to life. We're going to be celebrating the fifth of those seven next week. You know, Pesach, Passover. Where the consequence of sin, which is death, is resolved. It's the doorway to life. Matzah, unyeasted bread. It's where the penalty of sin, which is separation from God as a result of the fungus that infects us, is resolved in our favor. Bukurim, firstborn children. Where those who have participated in Pesach and Matzah are adopted into Yahweh's family. Shavuah is because God's not interested in spending his eternity with a bunch of dependent babies. Shavuah is all about us being enriched and empowered. That's what fathers do. Fathers, you know, I'm dad of two kids. And when both of my sons were born, man, that was a wonderful time. You know, they're cute as they can be. But, you know, the idea of having them stay that age forever and totally dependent, they can't talk to you, they can't go out and do anything with you. They can't engage you in conversation. If they were to stay that age forever, I'd say I think I'll pass. That's Yahweh's point of view, too. That's the purpose of Shavua. We can grow up. We're empowered. We're enriched. We're in a position where we can go off and explore the universe with Yahweh, engage in debates with Him, have fun together. It's what you do when you grow up. Shavua is about growing up. And when you grow up, it's time to take responsibility. Teruah is about us assuming the responsibility of being grown-ups in Yahweh's covenant family. What do grown-ups do? They share the truth with others. They warn others about harmful things. They point them in the right direction. That's what Teruah is all about. And ultimately, Yahweh is looking forward to the reconciliation of His family with the chosen people. And now, if you don't like Jews, you are not going to like heaven. You know, there are a lot of people out there that are anti-Semitic. There are not going to be any anti-Semites in heaven. Now, reconciliation is about unifying, uniting, affirming the relationship between Yahweh and Yehuda and Israel. Is there anybody that is part of Yehuda and Israel that wouldn't be Jewish? I mean, folks, that's a celebration of Yahweh and the relationship He has started long ago with His chosen people. And, of course, that brings us to the ultimate purpose of the universe and of life itself, and that's camping out with God. Sukkah, that's where we end up. That's the goal. Very simple. And those are the things that we either accept, we embrace, we capitalize upon, or it's arrivederci. God's not going to accept anyone who has chosen a different path. And it has to be that way. Now, there are some key thoughts. I shared these in the original writing of this chapter, but this, I think, is important because this program will be listened to by those who aren't part of the covenant. And so it's important that you know that the alternative to being rejected by God is to be restored, be adopted into His family, to be saved by Him. The salvation is a byproduct of the covenant relationship. And that outcome was actually presented in the previous statement to this one that we spent most of, in fact, I think our entire program a week ago on. So don't be angry at God for doing what He promised. We all choose our fate. We can choose poorly, and if we do, it's our fault, not His. You know, this idea, but I was misled, God. Give me another chance. It's not my fault. That's not going to fly. Second, being deceived, being misled, being beguiled is not an excuse, nor is just simply being naive. Stupid isn't going to work. You know, God, I'm retarded. You can't blame me. I'm stupid. Okay, well, I agree. You're stupid. Why would I want to spend eternity with you if you're stupid? Now, if you're, my younger brother is mentally handicapped, and I can tell you that the kind of love that emanates out of kind of joy of life that emanates out of someone that is mentally handicapped, but yet still knows Yahweh is wonderful. So there will be people that will be cured of that problem, but their attitude will and personality will better our experience in the covenant family and in heaven. So it's not my fault they lied to me. Not going to fly. Deception is a delusion which beguiles and betrays. Ignorance is not bliss. It is damning. Very clear in Hosea, you know, 4:6. Ignorance is the source of death. My people are destroyed because of their ignorance. It's not going to fly as an excuse. Third, to be rejected by God is not a penalty. It's not a punishment. It is simply a means that at the termination of one's mortal life, the souls of such individuals cease to exist. Not a penalty, not a painful in any way, not a punishment. You either end up with Yahweh in heaven, or you cease to exist, or if you were part of those who were misleading, then you'll get to spend eternity in Sheol, with your pal Paul. Fourth, there is no compromise. That's a human virtue, not a godly one. God, I don't think there's a statement in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that says, you know, I am the God of mercy, therefore of compromise. I haven't found that one yet.
It yeah, he'd never make it in the Senate. He couldn't be elected.
He couldn't. He couldn't be elected.
That's right.
He wouldn't get 1,000 votes if he were to run for office in America. He couldn't serve in office because he couldn't swear allegiance to the Constitution either.
That too. I mean, that's a little problem. But, you know, beyond that, no, anybody, the closer to the truth you're ever going to be, the farther away from popularity you're going to be.
Correct.
People think that, you know, you admitted to watching these whodunit shows like I watch.
Uh-huh.
And I have to tell you, it's amazing that, you know, they can go on and on and on and on and on about a murder. Now, I'm not going to go out and murder anybody, okay? And Yahweh doesn't direct us that way. But if I did, it'd be forgiven. You know, they make a bigger deal of things that really, to Yahweh, are by the wayside. They don't understand him. They call good bad. They call bad good. Right?
Yeah. Like the guy down there in Tennessee last week, he decided that with everybody promoting homosexuality, that God needed a voice and he would speak for God. And he quoted the passage in, I don't know if it was in Devarim or Shemot, but a passage in the Torah that says a man should not lie with another man like he lies with a woman. It is an abomination. And that was him speaking for God. You know, yeah. God doesn't like homosexuality. That's absolutely true. On a 1 to 10 list of important things for Yahweh to communicate to us, do you think that ranks as a 1? If God wanted a billboard to tell us something.
It didn't in his statements when he talked about life.
No, he's got the top 10 list. Yeah. It didn't make the top 10 list, did it?
No.
In fact, if that list was expanded to 100, do you think it would make the top 100 list? I don't think so.
No.
By the way, did any instruction on food, because that constantly comes up, did it make the top 10 list?
No.
No, it didn't. And you even have Yosha in, I don't know if it's, I think it's Luke, saying, you know, eat whatever is set before you. No, the food doesn't enter the top 10 list, and certainly homosexuality doesn't. And so if God's going to tell us something, you know, it's his summation of what's important for us to know is really included in those first three statements that he etched on the first tablet. And if you wanted to have a billboard, that would be a pretty good place to start. But people, as you say, focus on the minutiae. Yeah, it's true. It's somebody wrote me a letter today and wanted to know if Naaman, who was a general in an Aram's army, and there was a children's book being read about the fact that this man was cleansed of his leprosy, and you know, so the question was, so, you know, let's, I'm worried about this. Why, you know, why would God take this pagan man in the military and cleanse him of his leprosy? And, you know, why would that happen? And it happens to be an interesting story. It happens to be in the writings, but on a 1 to 10 scale of importance, it doesn't even hit as a 1/10 of 1 of 1. But it's an interesting little story, and it happens that this fellow had heard that Yahweh's prophets could provide instructions and insights that were healing, and rather than looking for a relationship with Yahweh, and rather than looking to be saved by Yahweh, the person had leprosy and just simply wanted the leprosy to go away. So he traveled to Yisrael and he met with the king because he was a big time general in the foreign army, And the king had a conniption fit. The king says, you know, why'd you come to me? I mean, you tried to make me look like a fool. You know, I can't cure you of your leprosy. You know, this is embarrassing. You never should have done this. Now you're just trying to make me look bad. You know, so it's the first point of the view is, okay, so the kings of Israel obviously had no relationship with Yahweh and were excluded from the process of healing. And then, you know, he went to, he met with Elisha, I think, and is the name of the prophet, and well, the particular prophet's really irrelevant, but met with the prophet. The prophet said, here's what you do. I want you to go and immerse yourself in the Jordan River 7 times, and your leprosy will go away. And the general had a conniption fit. You know, he then said, you know, I could have gone into a river where I live that are much better than that stupid little river that you have that's the Jordan. You know, I thought you were going to invoke some kind of a magical thing on me, and my leprosy would just go away. I'm wasting my time with you. And he stormed off. You know, well, Yahweh had a message. You know, it's immersion in the Jordan cleanses us. That was the message, and 7 is his favorite number. And it's all about, are you going to trust him or you're not going to trust him? You're going to follow his instructions, you're not going to follow his instructions. And so the guy, you know, stormed off, and he was met by somebody. I said, hey, why'd you storm off? Why'd you go do that? You travel all the way here to get healed of your leprosy. A guy tells you this will heal your leprosy, and you go storm off? Why don't you go down to the Jordan, immerse yourself 7 times, and see what happens? So he did, and he was cured of his leprosy. Wasn't saved. Wasn't adopted into the covenant. But he was cured of his leprosy. And then there's an interesting twist in the story in the end, and that is that one of the prophet's underlings said, you know, he was offering you big bucks after he was cleansed, and you didn't accept anything. And so I said, you know, you really should have made some money off of this whole deal. And the prophet says, no, that's not how we operate. You don't make money off of healing people. Wrong. And so
this isn't Paul's deal.
Right. Yeah, little underling went off, and he conned the guy out of a few shekels. So it's an interesting story, but would you base a religion on it? No. No. There's lots of antidotes from that story. You say, yeah, I can learn a lesson by all this. It's and one of the biggest problems of the story was the general was focused on the wrong thing. He was troubled by his leprosy. He wanted a cure for leprosy. You know, I've got another problem. It's called sin. I want a cure for my sin so that I can spend eternity with God. I would much rather be forgiven my sins and be adopted into the covenant than I would have the fact that, you know, I'm a little portly around the middle and have that result. You know, that's just me, however. You know, I'd rather be in the covenant and be saved than I would have a temporary ailment result. But fascinating story. But you get right back down to it. What is the purpose of the 119th Psalm? It's to focus on that which is important. That's what the purpose is. Doesn't mention any food law. Doesn't mention homosexuality. It doesn't mention how do you deal with leprosy. He says there's 4 things that are important. Pay attention to them. The choke is one of them. That's the inscribed prescriptions as to how to be cut into the covenant relationship. The terms and conditions of the covenant, paying attention to those. The pakudim, which are the prescriptions that teach us how to respond effectively to Yahweh. And, of course, the mizpat, which are the means that Yahweh delineated to resolve our disputes and make us perfect. Those are the 4 things. They're important. Much of the rest of this stuff, it isn't important. Focus on the big picture. All those who are guilty of violating the standard, like dross, which is impure and worthless, you will cause them to completely disappear, putting an end to them, so that as a result of your action, they will cease to exist. For this reason, I genuinely love and have developed a deep and abiding affection for every aspect of your eternal witness. Now, those things almost sound like they shouldn't be together, don't they? You're going to cause people who are guilty of violating your standard in the material realm, you're going to treat them like that which is completely worthless, and you're going to put an end to them. And he says, for this reason, I really love your eternal witness. Now, why do you think he would connect those thoughts? Why would
God? I think he would, because that points to the one thing you've been talking about here, that Yahweh is not dishonest. He has a direct path, and he doesn't delineate from that path.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
he's
happened.
Thankful that he's not talking out of both sides of his mouth, because
yeah,
that's
so.
What worldly leaders do.
Yeah, that means that
that's
you can rely
mean.
On him. The fact that this is what he said he's going to do, and the fact that you can rely on him is comforting. I mean, if you're going to rely on somebody for your salvation, it's helpful if that person is reliable with regard to salvation. I think that's half of it. I think there's a bigger part.
Okay, what do you think the other half is?
All right, Dode was surrounded by a lot of scumbags. There were a lot of people that wanted to kill him. There were people that wanted to torture him. There were people that wanted to slander him. He had lots of enemies. And he was surrounded, just like we are, with lots of idiots. And he, therefore, was looking forward to his time with Yahweh, knowing that when he and Yahweh were out exploring the universe together, out having a great celebration of life together, the morons wouldn't be there. All of those religious and political and military scholarly folks that were speaking against him, acting against him, plotting against him, they're not going to be there.
He was happy to shake the poison, too. Yeah,
exactly.
Of course.
Exactly. Just
sure.
Like, you know, the guy that was the Pauline advocate. Aren't you going to be glad to be done with him? Never to have to have another discussion with him?
Oh, I told him he was dead. I'll never have another discussion with him. I said, you're dead. You're like the walking dead. You ought to go out and make zombie movies. I asked him if he handed out crayons with that little book of his. You know, I mean, it's the depth of Sunday school. You know what I'm saying here? How could you dedicate your life to that? I mean, that's like swimming in a mud hole at best. You know,
taking children through it when it's infected with every manner of disease. A deadly swamp.
Yeah.
And so what Dode is celebrating here, what he is excited about, is realizing that in the covenant family in eternity, the scumbags aren't going to be there. God has promised that we will spend eternity only with brothers and sisters in the covenant. Everybody in the covenant is going to have the same attitude towards the Torah, towards the covenant, towards the Moed Mikre, towards Yahweh, that we do.
Well, you know what, too? You get put down enough. You get attacked enough. You get enough people on your case that you're going to develop that attitude.
Yes. And,
you know,
I will tell you,
imagine.
Based on what's been said up to this point, what Dode has said about, you know, I have never withheld your words. I have constantly shared your testimony before the great assembly. So if you are a member of the covenant, are you going to share the terms and conditions of the covenant and the Torah's teaching with others? You're going to keep your yap shut.
No, I'd say no. You share it, and I believe
And when you share it, are you going to develop enemies?
Truth is sharing it. Yes. In one
and
form
when you
or
share
another.
It, are most people going to be adverse to you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So, is there any way to be a member of the covenant and not share what Yahweh has to say, and therefore have most people be adverse to you? Aren't we all in this exact same position that Dode is in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And believe me, when somebody tells me that, you have no idea how you have just blasphemed Christians, I said, Christians can't be blasphemed. I said, there is nothing as pathetic. I said, you know, there's really nothing I could say about you that isn't true. Nothing.
Right.
I said, so you're worthless, you're hopeless, you're unknown, I'm way above you. I told him I piss on Jesus for fun. I said, how's that? Is that straight enough for you? You know. No, I did. You know, this really, really bums them out.
But,
you know, they start yanking their hairs out and running their heads in the walls.
Those who are Toralists look like, to me, they have dung covered their faces, those who reject his Torah. I guess it's certainly appropriate to speak very graphically and very negatively about the Christian caricature known as Jesus. Because the Christian caricature of Jesus isn't harmless, isn't godly, and is extraordinarily deadly. Maybe the single most deadly illusion in the world today is the Christian caricature of Jesus. And therefore, to overtly oppose Jesus is amongst the most godly things we can do.
Well, it's you know, to me, I look at the caricature of Jesus as sort of a depressed boob kind of walking around, running into people, looking for people to forgive. You know, he's more along the lines of Monty Python's Life of Brian or something than he is, you know, Yahushua.
You know what's really interesting? When you read the eyewitness accounts, even though I think that they're as errant as they are accurate in terms of what they depict,
well, sure.
What did you find about Yahushua is that while he did engage people, for the most part, he wanted nothing to do with them. He was constantly trying to sneak out of town. He was trying to disappear. He was trying to just hunker on down and have a pleasant chat and a meal with his disciples. For the most part, he says, you know, he's kind of saying, okay, what do you want? What do you want? What can I do for you? All right, I'll do this. But, you know, I don't want you talking about it. Please don't tell anybody about it. And it was almost constantly saying, oh, come on. You know, I came here because I wanted to affirm the Torah and to honor my promises to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim. That's why I'm here. And come on, folks, enough already with your feeble legs, your blind eyes, all of your different ailments. You know, just enough already. I mean, there's going to be disease for the next 2,000 years. And constantly just trying to, oh, God, can I just get out of here? Hunker on down with my disciples. I'm trying to teach them, and then I'm going to perform what I promised to do, and then I'm out of here. The actual Yahushua is so different than the Christian Jesus. Bring all the little children to me. Yes, here I am with my open arms. I just can't wait to hug you. Here's the Dode's next statement. My flesh gets goosebumps out of an awesome respect for you. And because of your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, I am genuinely respectful and completely awed. I have felt this way a lot of times. I can relate to that. There are countless times. I know they are in the thousands where I've been celebrating something that's in Yahweh's testimony, been doing a translation, a thought comes to mind, a connection is made. I get goosebumps. I'm not embarrassed to say there's times I'm even choked up when I see something that is for the first time. Or we're here having a conversation and we come to an insight that we hadn't already achieved. The idea today that Kirk came up with on the Shattering Myth Show, when you're talking about the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone, that was a goosebumps moment. I'm sure I didn't do it justice by saying how profound I thought it was. But as Yahweh is telling us how no one will be forgiven for slighting his name, for diminishing the importance of his name, for misleading people regarding his name.
Like the Yeshua thing. That would be one.
You know what Kirk said is, you know, when you look at his name in Paleo-Hebrew, you have an idea what he's saying. It's not just this idea that people don't say Yahweh. look at his name in Paleo Hebrew and look what it then consider what it means to dismiss that. You are dismissing the arm that's reaching down and out to us with the open hand to lift us up. You're dismissing the Father who is there to help his children. That's what you're dismissing when you dismiss that name. You're dismissing the two people that are standing up, reaching up, paying attention to Yahweh, grasping hold of that hand that represent the covenant. And then you're dismissing Yahweh's desire to secure us, to enrich us, to empower us, to make us more than we are with the Hebrew law. You're throwing away all of that, which is to throw away the entirety of the Torah and the covenant when you reject Yahweh's name. Now, that's pretty profound. That's a goosebump moment for me when somebody comes up with that. And then, you know, when another Kirk moment was trying to figure out, you know, why he was talking about the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And the thought was that he said, you know, when you take Yahusha's name, which is really a identity designation mission statement, because it's Yahweh saving, he says, what is added? What is different than just Yahweh? Because you've got in Yahusha the Yod, the He, and the Waw, Yahu. What is added? A tooth and an eye, a shin and a name. The only difference between Yahweh and Yahusha is a shin and a name, a tooth and an eye. And make the connection. You know? So what does
that I think we've got somebody here in the chat room pushing the Yeshua nonsense. I just want to say to him, you know, in Malachi, what it says is my familial covenant relationship exists with him. Life and salvation, I give them reverently and respectfully. He reveres me and respects me. Now, in parentheses here, I want you to hear this. On account of the presence of my name, he is awesome and astonishing. So you're going to have Matanyahu. You're going to have Yahochanan. But Yahweh, a diminished form of Yahweh, you're going to take Yah out of his name and go to Yesh. And I want to know how you do that, because it's spelled Yad He Wah Shin Ain. In Paleo Hebrew, and that's where he shared his name. If you want to go with the Babylonian,
It's written that way 220 times.
Yeah, yes, I know. And 220 guys saying
it
Yeshua.
Is never once written without the hay following the yod. Never once.
Yeah, it's Yod Hay.
And the hay is pronounced 99% of the time that it appears in a Hebrew word.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really simple. Shah. But let me finish the thought on the shin and the ain, because it is profound. Mm-hmm. What Yahusha therefore does with the yod, the he, and the waw, representing Yahweh, he adds two things. With the shin, which depicted teeth, was designed to convey word. Oral communication. So that makes Yahusha the word of Yahweh. That's pretty profound. You know, Yahweh said, I will put my words in his mouth. He is the word of Yahweh. He is the incarnation of the Torah, the word of Yahweh. And so the first of those two letters, Shin, represents word. And the second, the Ain, the I, is he is the visual representation or manifestation of Yahweh, and he provides a perspective to see Yahweh. I mean, how could you have something better than that, and then to throw that all away with the rabbinical stupidity of Yeshua? You know, and beyond the Yeh, which doesn't identify him with Yahweh, and he said, I came in my Father's name. Beyond that, Shua means to cry out in Hebrew. Yasha is the Hebrew verb for save, and Shua is the Hebrew verb for cry. So, what you've got is someone unrelated to Yahweh who's crying. And that's the name that you want to use? That's the name you're going to pick, even though it never appears anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms? And you're going to reject Yahusha, which is Yahweh saves, in favor of a man-made name that never appears once? That's embarrassing. And if you're going to do that, you ought not tell people about it. You ought not tell people, that's what I'm going to cling to. That's what I've accepted, because it makes you look stupid. You know, not a good thing to do. You know, Yahweh says, do you know my name? Do you know my son?
Yeah, I went out and I trained with the people who say Hashem and Judash D, and
yeah,
therefore I'm not going to use Yah. Well, then he wasn't who he said he'd be, because he said he's awesome and astonishing on the count of my name.
Right.
So if you want to take the name out of it, go ahead. You don't know him.
You're right.
Boob. Go right ahead, boob.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and by the way, while you're there, boob, get out of the chat room, because you're not one of us. Thank you.
Yeah, you can't be a member of the covenant family if you don't know Yahweh. You just can't be. That's knowing, loving the name. Is a requirement for being in the covenant. And if you don't know it, then you aren't a member. So my flesh gets goosebumps out of the awesome respect for you, for Yahweh. Not for anyone else, for Yahweh. And I find that all the time. And I, you know, we originally came, most of us, to have this respect for Yahweh because of his creation testimony. It was pretty empowering. And then when we considered what he had to say about the flood and said, wow. Now, that's, like the creation accounts, a perfect match for scientific reality. And then we came to examine his prophecies. And we said, yeah, I'm going to say with absolute certainty that he proved that he inspired the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms based upon getting everything that he said historically and in the future correct. But, you know, that's not where I got goosebumps. That's where I had some wow moments. But I really get the goosebumps when you come to understand just how magnificent his story is, how beautifully he's told it, how unreligious he is, how approachable he is, how humble he is, how much he wants to do for us as his children, as our Father. That's the goosebump stuff. The goosebump stuff is just coming to know him as an individual. What does it for me? I think that, Larry, I speak for you. That's what does it for you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, every time I see something that solidifies in my mind what I already know to be true, and then there's this other layer thrown on it, pretty soon I'm forgetting more than, you know, I mean, obviously, everybody in this chat room probably feels the same way. You're forgetting more than most people know.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it's going to be.
Now, what Dode says here is the thing that gives him goosebumps is the means that Yahweh uses to achieve justice and resolve disputes, to exercise
justice.
Well,
it ought to give you goosebumps based on what he did to
correct
resolve
correct
those disputes. Absolutely.
What a marvelous plan. Yeah, what a marvelous plan that, okay, I'm just, I've created the means to resolve your disputes, and I personally paved that path. I personally walked it. I personally did everything that was required. I suffered so you wouldn't have to. I endured separation so you wouldn't have to. When you realize what the creator of the universe was willing to humble himself to do on behalf of guys like you and me and gals like those listening that are part of the covenant, when you realize what he did as the creator of the universe, as the author of life, what he was willing to endure for us to be part of his family, if that doesn't get your attention, if it doesn't get your goosebumps, and, you know, Dode is saying, you know, it doesn't humble him. you know, I'm not humbled by Yahweh's willingness to be the Passover lamb and to have our sin associated with him on matzah. I'm not humbled by that. I celebrate it. And it's not something that is fearsome. It's not something that is demeaning. It's not humbling. I think it's a great celebration of life that our Heavenly Father is like a loving father. Would you do those things for your children? I would. And he chose to do them for us. It's celebration time. That's what fathers do. And he wants us to celebrate it. He wants us to respond to him the way that Jod did. Jod said, I'm respectful, I'm completely awed, and I've got goosebumps based upon these things. Now, speaking of the Shin, the next group of eight statements in the 119th Psalm is brought to us by the letter Ain, which is drawn as an I. And so, from these statements, we ought to see things that provide a perspective on the Torah, a perspective on Yahweh, a means to use our eyes to observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider what he has to tell us. The Ain is a really important letter. It's the first letter that differentiates Yahusha's name from Yahweh's name. It's the letter that begins to quantify that Yahusha is Yahweh saving us. That and the Shin, the word of Yahweh. And so here's the first letter brought to us by the Hebrew Ain. It is Asha is the first word. Asha begins with an Ain. Asha means to engage, to act, to respond, to endeavor. And so it was written in the first person. And so this is Dode acting. This is Dode responding. Now, it was written in the call perfect, which means that he only had to do it once. He did it in a manner that was complete, and it was genuine, which means this actually occurred. He says, I have genuinely acted on behalf of Asa, the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, the mishpat, and have been vindicated, Sadak. You will never remain idle, and you will never leave me to tyrants who would mistreat, extort, or try to oppress me. I am fond of this passage for lots of reasons. I have my favorites. I guess that's my prerogative, right? I can look at Yahweh's testimony and have verses that I like more than others. I like this one a lot. And you might say, why do I like this one? Because one of the things that I constantly try to share is that our participation in the covenant and its byproduct, salvation, is not a free gift. And it's important to recognize that. And that's something that misleads Christians. Dode acted, engaged, he participated in the mitzvah. If we don't engage in the relationship, we're not part of the relationship. If we don't act on the terms and conditions of the covenant, we're not in the covenant. If we don't answer Yahweh's invitation to attend his Moed Mikre, we're not on the path. We don't receive
you the benefit. You mean the Mud Mikre. We've got a U person in there. The Mud Mikre. The Mud Mikre.
The Mud, okay.
The Mud Mikre on the day of the Yubel. It's like Barney Rubble wrote this. I think
so
Barney Rubble wrote the new U language in Paleo Hebrew.
Okay.
So see, there are people that don't understand Guyam,
not
Goyam.
It's Shalom, not Shalom.
Shalom.
Yeah,
Shalom and
and it is the
and
Torah that we are the Torah that we are examining. Okay, so it's his Torah instructions about Shalom, and that's what we're going to do with. Okay, well, listen.
Yeah,
I can tell
like
you,
Barney Rubble wrote this stuff.
No,
I'm telling you, there were cavemen out there.
Yeah, no, I want to be fair here. Mm-hmm. While there is a 0% chance that the Hayes in Yahweh's name are pronounced yeh, eh, because all you have to do is look at the verb upon which Yahweh was based by his own presentation.
Like Hayah, you mean?
Hayah. And then look at Hebrew words with the hey in it, and the ah sound in Yah-Wah is certain. Now, I will tell you that there is a 20% possibility that the Wah in Yahweh's name is pronounced as a U. There's a 20% possibility. Now, I have chosen to embrace the 80%, but I won't condemn somebody that embraces the 20%. Now, I've chosen to embrace the 80% because the words that we are most certain about the pronunciation of the wa, the words that are spoken and have been spoken the most throughout eternity, carrying the pronunciation of the wa down to us today, all have the wa pronounced as an O. The most famous of those is Shalom. The second
the
most would be Torah. Yes.
How about the Yobel? That would be the Yubel.
Yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is that there are some 50 names where Yahweh, who is very comfortable with the contraction of his name, refers to people as, for example, Yob or Yoel. And it is conveying
Yub and Yub.
Yeah, it's conveying
like
the wa as a no. And so with the book that Yahweh uses to introduce his name, being the Torah and the O-sounded Torah coming from the wa, I'm going to go with the 80% likelihood that the wa in Yahweh's name is pronounced as it is in Torah. And
do you know why I think that's 100% instead of 80? Do you want to know why I'm willing to go that far?
Why?
Because Yahweh didn't hide his name. He wasn't coy about it. He shared it.
That's correct.
He wanted us to know it in spite of the rabbi's vowel pointing system.
Yes, yeah, I would agree. The only reason that I don't go to 100% is that I think having a humble attitude in terms of, okay, I've invested the time, and this is what I learned, and I'm going to share what I've learned, and this is my conclusion based on what I've learned. So I not only share the conclusion, but probably 50 pages of evidence that led to that conclusion, but I'm not going to pretend that I have all the answers. I know where to find the answers, and I did. I went to the answer book, and this was the answer that I came up with in studying the answer book. But, I'm still open to somebody, having a different point of view.
I don't attack people typically that say Yahweh, and they put a U instead of an O. That's fine.
When they start going
Tura and Shalom, I do.
Because it's
ridiculous.
It gets to be ridiculous after a while. Now, I will tell you that I did have a person who, for a period of months, wrote me and actually was vicious about Yahweh being a pagan name and absolutely wrong, and Yahuwah being absolutely right. And he kept on taunting me to go to this website because this person himself didn't know. So he had to be taunting some writer that had a book on online. So one day I actually, after a year of trying to explain to the fellow how I came up with Yahuwah, why I wasn't going to condemn him for Yahuwah, and here's the evidence on behalf of Yahuwah, would never read it, never consider it. So I went to the site, and this person recommended, and oh, my God. I mean, in the first, like, five paragraphs, there had to be 50 mistakes that this person, this author, had made. And he was a Pauline Christian that was advocating all of this. And it just, you just become revolted by somebody who is absolutely certain of something and is probably wrong. But I'm not going to pretend that I'm absolutely right, but I will tell you that the Book of Answers certainly strongly implies and infers that it is Yahweh. And that if that isn't correct, then I don't know why there are some 50 names that are like Yoel, which we know for certain is a contraction of Yahweh is God.
Yah is our father. That's Ab. How about Job, which they call Job today? Cry out to Yah. He'd be Yub. Yub. Yeah. Hey, Yub. Let's go over there with Yub.
Yeah.
Wow. Imagine if you had two kids, one Yub and one Yub. Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, this would be a hard language to speak.
Yeah, it'd be, it's hard. It's highly unlikely. Let's put it that way. Okay, so here is one of my favorite passages in the 119th Psalm. I have genuinely acted upon the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. If you're going to benefit from Passover, you have to answer the invitation. You can't benefit from Passover by ignoring the invitation. And there are some things that we ought to do on Passover that says, yeah, I get it. You know, and the same is true with matzah. You know, you don't answer the invitation to participate in matzah by going out and having some baked bread filled with yeast. You know, and Dode thought about and then responded. He acted. The covenant requires our activity. There are five conditions to participate. We talked about those earlier in the program. And you have to think it through. There is no chance, that's what the problem with Christianity. There is no chance whatsoever that God wants to save someone that doesn't know him. That'd be stupid. There'd be no chance that God would want to save someone who is religious. That would make heaven like earth today and therefore hellish. And there'd be no chance that God would want to spend an eternity with someone who doesn't want to engage in a relationship with him. The way that he has modeled the covenant relationship is very much like we have marriage relationships. And if my wife says, I really want nothing to do with you. Okay, we can have this marriage thing, but you do all the work. I want you to raise the kids. I want you to earn the living. I want you to take care of the house. I want you to prepare all of the meals. And I'm not even going to be here, but we're going to be married. And you can give me the benefits of this relationship, but I'm not going to participate in it. Oh, boy. What a fun marriage that would be, right?
That's one that's going to last about 10 minutes.
Yeah, of course.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, it's like the kid in high school that's infatuated with the girl, and he has this imaginary relationship with her. But when he asks her out, she says, no, thank you. I don't want to go out with you. There is no benefit in a relationship unless both parties contribute, unless both parties participate. But when both parties participate, relationships are really fun things. They're really cool. And so you cannot engage in a relationship with Yahweh, and the covenant is the relationship with Yahweh, unless you act. Now, this particular action isn't on the terms and conditions of the covenant. It's the means that Yahweh has delineated for us to exercise good judgment and resolve disputes, which means that he has acted upon the Moed Mikre. That's what he's acting upon. He doesn't delineate them here, but that's what he is saying, that he's answering the invitation. He's acting on them. He's attending these celebrations of life. Now, the second reason I like this is the first reason is because it's action-oriented. And a relationship with God has to be action-oriented or it's meaningless. Salvation isn't free. It's a byproduct of the covenant, and you become a member of the covenant by acting, by engaging. The second part of this that I really like is that I shared in our last program how I've gone out on a limb to define certain words. And I try to be consistent. I try to look up those words. I try to see how those words are used. I try to go to the verbal root of the words. And I try to...
Which is a big part of this. A huge part of this.
I try to make my translation of the Hebrew words consistent with Yahweh's character, Yahweh's Torah instructions, and with other things that God has said, with His personality, with His approach to us. So I've tried to do that. I think that's a sane approach, particularly since He happens to be God, to make His words consistent with who He is. The second is that I've always tried to go to the verbal root of a word and to get the actionable meaning of it. I like to go and see how Yahweh has used a word first and then how He's developed that word over a process. And I came to the conclusion in doing that, that misfot was the means that Yahweh used to resolve disputes. It is a word that you could translate judgments only in the sense of justice. And so it was pretty obvious that the misfot is the means that Yahweh uses to resolve disputes. Now, why do I like this passage?
Means.
Yeah, why do I like this passage? Because what's the word after misfot? Tzedak. What does tzedak mean? To be vindicated. To be righteous. To be upright.
Well, that would make that correct then. That word
that,
right. Because,
so,
yeah.
Under this basis, there is no way to render misfot any other way than the means to resolve disputes when it leads to tzedak vindication. Right? So,
that's right.
So when you find a passage that says, all right, you did your homework, you invested the time to come up with a rendering of the word that was meaningful, consistent, appropriate, and etymologically sound, and then you find a statement in Yahweh's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that says, yep, that is the definition, you feel good about it.
Sure you do. And, of course, we take these things for granted because of, you know, a lot of thought and a lot of work, but... It's a masterstroke. And by the way, these are the kinds of things you're not going to see in religious material.
Correct.
What are they going to call the misfot? What are they going to call it? What are they going to call it?
Judgment.
Yeah, judgment. Not the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which is what
right.
it is.
And so how do judges
you know,
vindicate? A judge, you know, if it's judgment, if a judge is judging you,
well, that's,
you are
that's,
very
that's
seldom
vindicated.
You're
it's
in front of a judge.
Well,
I think what they say in America, 99.9% of those who are in a court, in a criminal court as a defendant, are guilty of committing a crime. You know, if a judge is judging you, you're in trouble. If you're approaching Yahweh as your judge, you're done. You're done for.
Yeah, you know what I had a federal judge tell me one day? He told me this. He says, Larry, he goes, you know, I've been doing this like 40 years. And he says, I can tell you right now, if justice happens in a courtroom, it's an accident.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
We have a legal system.
Federal judge
system.
Told me that.
Yeah, we have a legal system, not a justice system. But Yahweh is just. And so
absolutely.
As a just judge, to exonerate his children, to receive his children, for us to come before him not as a judge but as our father, for that to occur, Yahweh had to come up with a means to ransom us, to redeem us, to pay the price for our sin. And his mitzvot, his means to resolve disputes and to achieve justice, is the means that he went, the way that he went about that, so that we can...
Well, it clearly says in Yasha Yahu, he took the strokes due the family. That's what
right.
it says. I
there
mean,
you go.
You know, there's
and
no
that
way
is
around
what
it.
Causes us to be vindicated. So I have genuinely
right.
acted upon the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes and have been vindicated. Now, if Ms. Fox was judgment, how would you act upon judgment to be vindicated? You're not. Are we the judge of our souls? No. How could you act upon a judgment and be vindicated?
Act upon judgment.
Yeah. Well, that's a stupid one. Stupid.
Of course.
That you can't even read. I've come to the conclusion you cannot read a English-based Old Testament, as they call it, and make any sense of it at all. It makes no sense. It's rubbish. I couldn't write. It's rubbish.
So there are times when, as a translator, trying to convey Yahweh's full intent as accurately, as completely as possible, that I feel vindicated, that I feel like I'm, for this shining moment, standing tall. In this passage where he says, I have genuinely acted on behalf of Ashah, mitzvot, the means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, wa, and therefore have been vindicated, tzedak, it's one of those moments. And this is not a brag here. What this is an affirmation that if you focus on what Yahweh has to say and you care about trying to get it right, you can not only get it right, but you can have verification. You can be vindicated in the whole process of analysis and study and search. And stand tall, be upright. That's what tzedak means. When we figure out what God's saying and capitalize upon it, we ought to stand tall. And that's what tzedak means. You know, that's one of the most amazing part of vindication of tzedak, is that the base of the word means to stand tall.
That's
and
right.
So if you're being judged, you're bowed down before the judge, right? But if you're not, if you've been vindicated, you stand tall. Yahweh's whole idea of making us perfect is so that we can stand tall with him, so we can have a backbone, so that we're not groveling on the along the ground, so we're not down on our knees, so we can stand tall and walk with him and engage with him and look him, you know, eye to eye, walk, you know, arm in arm, be friends, be associates, be comrades, be family.
You know, this week earlier, we were in one of the groups that we attend and kind of run, really. A guy came in with a new book that he wrote, and he had two paragraphs that showed how much more accurate they were. And guess what word I found in paragraph number two? Take a shot.
Grace.
Command.
Okay.
Command.
Yeah, command.
I fell out. I said, so now free will's out the window. I said, are you
right.
Kidding?
Yeah, mitzvah.
You got to be kidding.
Command. Yeah, mitzvah is the terms and conditions of a relationship.
You know, Yahweh said to Abram, it is my request and my desire that you of your own volition will literally walk away and genuinely come out of your country.
Right.
Now,
you can only get that translation. Now, Larry, to be fair, you can only get that translation if you pay attention to the moods, to the stems. If the moods and stems.
You know anything about Yahweh's character or nature, it might help a little bit.
Well, yeah, but you know, the stems are relational constructs that take the verbs and establish a relationship between the speaker and the one spoken being spoken to. And here between Yahweh and Abraham, so the stems establish the relationship between the two of them, and the moods convey volition and desire and will. And if you are unwilling to consider the Hebrew stems and moods and consider them superfluous, and then if you don't look at the verbal definition, the verbal root of a word, then you can throw all that out. But, man, I wouldn't do that. Why would you want to throw out all of the insights that are unique to Hebrew? You think that Yahweh came up with this plan of having stems and moods and conjunctions and wanted us to ignore them?
He wanted us to trash a perfect language. No, I don't think so. Nope.
No, I don't think so. You will never remain idle nor leave me to tyrants who would mistreat, extort, or try to oppress me. You know, one of the things that I have found and take great comfort in is that when we are about Yahweh's business, and Yahweh likes us to engage in his business, he wants us to share his testimony, to be a witness, to translate and convey his words, and he wants us to be about this. When we're about his business, no harm's going to come to us. Yeah, we may have people that bellyache and say mean and slanderous things. Who cares? When a person who doesn't know Yahweh says something mean about you, Larry, does it bother you?
No, not really.
No, their opinion is irrelevant to you.
They're like zombies to me.
Right. But when you're engaged in Yahweh's business, which is to share his word, to convey the purpose and meaning of the covenant,
mm-hmm.
He is not going to allow someone to physically harm you. They're not going to take you. You know, as many people as have threatened to kill me, I'm not in hiding. I don't have a gun. I am in no way, shape, or form trying to avoid them. Because when you're about Yahweh's business, Yahweh will protect those who speak for him. Now, Dode spoke directly for him in a way that is essentially infinitely beyond the way you and I do. Because all we do is convey what he conveyed through Dode. But it still applies. Just as Yahweh could not remain idle. And if you want God to engage in your life, if you want him to do his will in your life, you know, Christians pray that all the time, then engage in what he cares about.
They pray his will be done, which is Torah. You get to know him through his Torah and invite him into your home. Call out.
If you want God's will to be done in your life, do what God wants. Be about what he cares about. You know, share the Torah. Talk about
the
covenant.
Plan, you know,
announce the Mikra. It's really easy to have God's will be done in your life. Accept the Torah. Answer the invitations to attend the Moed Mikra. Engage in the covenant. That's his will. It's not hard. You don't
spend
have to
Shabbat
ask him.
With him.
I have never
have
asked
a cup of coffee
Yahweh.
With him.
Yeah, I've never asked Yahweh for him to tell me his will for my life. I know his will for my life. His will for my life
you.
Is exactly the same as it is for every one of us who are part of the covenant. His will for our life is exactly the same. Good enough for me, good enough for you, good enough for all of us. This is not difficult. And if you want God to do miracles through you, then be about his business. Share his testimony. This goes on to say, I accept your pledge to personally pay the price to meet the eternal needs of your servant on behalf of and according to all that is good, moral, and generous. Do not allow arrogant and haughty, insolent and presumptuous, self-willed, self-absorbed, and self-motivated tyrants to continually torment me, fulfilling their desire to make me suffer. Dode is recognizing that when he said that God could not remain idle, that God has done everything that was required. He paid the price to engage on behalf of those who choose to participate in his covenant. He's paid the price. He's engaged. He is going to meet our needs. You know, but what are our needs? Is your need, Larry, to become the most handsome man on earth?
No. I'm going to be in a lot of trouble.
How about the richest man on earth? Is that one of your needs?
No.
How about to know Yahweh better?
Yeah, that's a need I have.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to live,
to enjoy the covenant relationship as much as is possible. Is that a need?
Yeah, it sure is.
Okay. So, Yahweh paid the price for us to engage with him, to meet our needs, not our wants. This doesn't say that you meet all of my wants. And I'm sure Dode would have liked to have had the general's wife without having to send him off to his death. That was a want. That was not a need. Yahweh meets our needs. Our needs are to know him, to engage in the covenant, and to be protected and empowered and enriched and saved by him. Those are our needs. He meets all those needs, and he paid a tremendous price.
By the way, unlike Christian.com,
yeah,
I will bet money. I'll bet anything right now. I'll make this bet, and Dode can tell us in the future. Dode didn't ask Yahweh's blessing for that.
No, he
I'll
didn't.
I'll bet he did it on his own.
Yeah, that is true. You know,
he didn't go to ChristianMingle.com, you know, to get a date because God was waiting for him to find the love of his life.
Find God's match for your life. It's as if God is going to engage.
He's involved in your love life.
Yeah, God's going to engage through a private business to hook people together. Yeah, sure. Okay. Just that it must be the same God that causes Christians to score touchdowns.
Yeah, well, he's that same God. Yeah, sure he is. He doesn't exist.
Yeah, well, it's not a real God, but he certainly has his way with lots of religious folks. Dode says, my eyes have decided, and they yearn for your salvation and for your promised word of righteousness and vindication. So it was Dode's eyes that brought him to salvation. And he explains where his eyes found salvation, in his Emra, in Yahweh's word, in his promises. And that's how he became vindicated. Ain. This is brought to us by the letter Ain. What is the single most important Ain word? Eyes. In fact, Ain, the letter Ain, is the Hebrew word for eye. Now, it's when you think of the Paleo-Hebrew letters, you know, most of the Paleo-Hebrew letters, still the name for those letters is the same as the drawing for the letters. You know, Beth, the second letter, means family to this day. It's a drawing of a family home. Ain means eye in Hebrew. Right to this day, it's drawn in the shape of an eye. Yod, the Yod in Yahweh's name, it used to be called a Yod, it was changed to Yod. It means hand, and it's drawn in the form of a hand. So these words have evolved like the Hey in Yahweh's name. It means to behold, it means to look up, to notice. And what is the Hey drawn? It's someone looking up, reaching up to God. Well, the most famous of all of the Ain words is I. And he's talking about my eyes. Now, what would you use your eyes for if you're trying to know Yahweh? If you want to know, if you want to find salvation, and if you, how would you use your eyes?
You might read his words. Is that it?
That's what Dode is saying here. My eyes decided, and they yearn for your salvation, and for the promised word of righteousness and vindication. You know, you read words. Our eyes exist so that we might observe what is written in the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms. That's what Dode is doing. He used his eyes to find salvation in the Word. And that's how he became vindicated. Had nothing to do with his heart. Had everything to do with where his eyes led him when he was observant. And to observe means to focus on, to look upon, to closely examine and carefully consider the written word and the promises therein. It's not complicated, is it?
No.
Marvelous story. If we use our eyes to examine Yahweh's word, his promises, we too find vindication. Just as Dode did. But to find it, you have to decide that that's what you're going to do. You have to yearn for that. It's got to be something that's a priority to you. Because if it's not a priority, it's not going to happen. If you don't decide to do it, use free will to say, you know, I'm going to pay attention to what God had to say in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, because after all, he is God, and I'd like to know him, and I'd like to spend time with him. If you don't make that decision, if you prefer to be misled by human religious institutions, you're never going to know him. You'll never find righteousness or vindication. Shaddock. All right, well, we're come to the end of our program. And, Larry, I want to thank you for participating with us this whole time. I think we had a couple of other callers that I probably should have brought up, but it didn't, so I apologize to them. But I had fun with you tonight. It's always fun to talk about.
Oh, hey, no, I always enjoy starting my Shabbat this way.
Yeah.
Give me a cup of coffee and get into it.
Oh, yeah. And I think even the fact that on this program, we in the chat room had some derisive elements. It's probably
idiots, boobs.
Yeah, yeah.
Boobs.
I mean,
yeah. How do you get yesh out of Yahweh? I mean, tell me.
And
is Yahweh a liar when he says, you know, he's awesome and astonishing on account of my name?
Right.
What, he didn't put his name in his name? He's a liar. I mean, that's what they're saying.
I came in my father's name, therefore my father's name is Yahweh, so I must be Jesus. Oh, no, I'm not
Jesus.
Yeah,
I must be Yesh.
I'm a Yeshua.
I must be Yesh.
Yeah,
well,
I'm old
Yesh. Yesh.
Oh, Yeshua here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's
nice. I don't really think that, by the way, in fact, I'm quite certain that Yeshua is no better than Jesus. Doesn't
well,
get you any closer.
It's worthless to me. I ask, what is this Yeshua thingy? What does it mean? You know, they try to take every letter and say it means something.
It is
just so unbelievable. Like,
but
it's an acronym. It's an acronym. You know, like he was in the Navy or something, naming a ship or a group of commanders,
yeah.
Squads.
Yeah. Where do you get the E sound? I mean, there's no vowel there.
Yeah.
You go from the vowel and you're inserting a vowel without purpose. You know, I don't know why you'd want to do that when the vowels are provided.
Well, what happens is these people go out and they're trained by Messianics. That's where they get it. And
yeah,
Messianic Judaism.
The rabbis came up with an acronym for him. That the acronym in Hebrew means he whose name should be blotted out or forgotten, and that's the acronym
that's
for him.
Yes.
And they say, well, the rabbis
yes,
say it that way, so that must be right. But no, it's not right. And I think there's other people that use Greek pronunciations to get at a name, but they don't know that the name is never written out anywhere in the first, second, third, or even fourth century manuscripts. So that's a waste of time. And you know, when Yahweh, who created DNA, which is a really complicated language because it's a three-dimensional language, when he created the language of life, DNA, and then its mirror, RNA, if he's capable of creating those two languages, I'm going to assume that he can spell his own name. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say he can spell his name. And since he wrote his name...
Way out there on a limb, except that limb is like a sequoia.
Yeah,
that's
the limb I'm going to go out on, and I'm going to say that I suspect that he can spell his own name, and he spelled it Yahusha, and it's a compound of Yahweh and salvation, and it seems like that's an apt depiction of what he did on Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim on our behalf.
Well, a lot of people, you got to understand, they haven't looked at extant material, not even a little. You know, they don't look at amplifications. I mean, when I started learning Yahweh, every bit of it's been amplified. Okay,
yeah.
And so, you know, when they're doing it, what they're doing typically is they run off and they listen to YouTube videos by people who have propped themselves up as teachers,
yeah.
And you will hear some of the damnedest things. You'll hear
you gotta be really careful.
Race.
When you refer to yourself as a rabbi or as a teacher, I think you're subjecting yourself to a great fall. It's much better to present yourself as irrelevant and they say, you know, I've looked at this material.
You mean like
I've,
not even use your name on radio?
Yeah, which, yeah, that's irrelevant.
My name isn't all that well known, so I don't care. So.
Yeah, so if you present yourself as irrelevant and say that I am just simply a searcher who enjoys Yahweh's testimony and have worked to convey it as accurately as possible, and have thought about it and have come up with the realization that God has made the following things known to us that are reasonably important for you to know, and it has nothing to do with me, all that has to do with Him, I think you're in a much better position than if you say that you're the teacher. But I say, you know, as a teacher, I don't want to go there. I'm really, really uncomfortable going there. And, you know, and I probably know better than they do. And I ain't going there.
Well, you know, because you know him well enough, you know your words are not really that important.
No, they aren't. My enthusiasm for him is important to him. It's important to me, but it shouldn't be important to you.
No.
Your enthusiasm for him is important to you. It's important to him. But, you know, I'm happy that you're enthused about him. But, you know, you're a hell of a guy, but your words are really not as important to me as Yahweh's words. And my words
are
important
to you. And you know, the only sweat that counted was my own, you know.
Yeah,
or maybe if I was training somebody, getting them ready for a show.
The relationship with Yahweh, while it is a family, we come to him individually.
That's right.
And we ought not pretend that we are a gateway to Yahweh. That's why I'm always bothered when somebody encounter someone that is lost, and they send, but they're a writer, they have their website, whatever they may have, and they say they want to go send a copy of one of my books to them. And I said, no, don't do that. I mean, if you can't present Yahweh's testimony, don't present it this guy's book. Either you know it and can present it, or don't engage. And then when that person then creates some anti website on me, I just said, what was she doing?
I've seen a couple of those. And I thought, boy, he must have really got under your skin there. And they're mostly like theologian types, you know.
Yeah.
It's sad. If you read any of their material, by the way, which I've read a little bit of it, it's hard to get through four or five paragraphs because it's pathetic. I mean, they got
pathetic.
Everything wrong. They know next to nothing.
Yeah.
It's really bad news. And I don't like looking at, you know, years ago I used to hear you say, you know, I don't engage Christians and I don't go to, you know,
radical
Christian websites and debate.
Right. I don't,
things like that. And I don't either, by the way. They end up, you know, on one of my postings or somebody
invites them. If they come to me, I'll give them
both
barrels.
You know,
but I'm not going to go seek them out.
Yeah, because it's just a pathetic waste of time. You know, yeah. There's no, they don't care what Yahweh's words say, so why do I want to share them?
Right.
You know, it's a waste of everybody's time.
All I do is make them mad. Gain nothing.
Yeah, you used to say that you didn't like doing that, going and debating, and you know, I mean, I'm at that point where I just have no interest at all in listening to what they say, because everything they say is a verse snippet, and it comes from Corinthians or some other diarrhea that flowed out of the mouth of Paul.
Never get anywhere.
Well, you know what? One thing I found is they don't believe Yahusha. They don't care what he said.
Of course.
They don't.
Now,
they
there
don't
is
believe
a
him.
Reason, though, to engage those who come to you, and that is because you have Facebook pages and sites that attract a significant audience. And,
right. Yeah.
When you engage the advocates of religion, you're doing two things. You're not helping them at all. And you're never going to help them.
No, but other people are reading the post.
But other people are reading it, and the people who are open-minded are benefiting and growing closer to Yahweh. And that's the thing that I found initially. So many people came to know Yahweh because they were exposed to the arguments that you were having on your Facebook site. So that's first. And the second thing is that those who know Yahweh are part of the covenant, but have loved ones who are not, and who want to deal with the religious objections to engaging with Yahweh, they find in your ability to and willingness to cite Yahweh's word as the exclusive argument that you bring against religion, they're equipped. So
well,
you're equipping
well, no, it reinforces, you know, when you start sharing Yahweh's words, you learn yourself. I mean, it's not, yeah, it
well,
equips
that,
everybody.
Is the third. That is the third benefit. That's the reason that I always laugh when somebody thanks me for the books. I just laugh and say, you know, I was the biggest beneficiary. Why would you thank me? You know, when you're studying,
I had a judge tell me he wasn't impressed with Yahweh's words just here about a week ago. I told him he wasn't impressed. I'm sure Yahweh's all shook up.
I am. I'm really impressed.
I told him.
I get
he's all shook up.
Yeah, I'm impressed by them. I don't mind admitting that. In fact, I would celebrate it. I am always impressed with his words, and I'm very seldom impressed with anybody else's. I will
say the
exception to that is, twice in the last few weeks, Kirk's called in, and he has this kind of southern drawl, and he's just kind of a real humble guy, and then he lays something that's really profound in terms of profound insight of Yahweh's words, and you go, whoa, that was impressive.
Yeah, it's strong. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, you do get that. Cherie had done some adding to something this week that was just awesome. It was monstrous. It was beautiful. And I told her so. So, you know, people are out there, they're engaging, and they're being effective.
Correct.
And people who we're looking for are people that are looking.
Right.
Well, I don't care about the religious people. They're not looking for anything. They want to
and the people who are looking at the right place, which is Yahweh's testimony, they're going to be impressed. They are impressed.
People that want to walk away from the big deal. You know when he says that, you know, anybody that puts the words of foreign gods in my mouth, surely that prophet will die. Over in a book called Words. What he writes is words.
Yeah,
so, what do you think the odds are that he authorized a book named after a sun goddess?
Zero.
It's
a transliteration of a Greek word, and he only speaks Hebrew. I mean, I'm sure that if he wishes to speak English, he can speak English. But his only written communication to us is in Hebrew. In fact, as the word of Yahweh, Yosha spoke Hebrew. What do you think that he chose a Greek transliteration of an Egyptian word that was named after a pagan goddess as the name for his holy Bible? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say zero. Zero.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can go any lower than that, I'm with you. God, man, it's just so pathetic.
Zero. Yeah,
it's
when Yosha referred to the words, he said Torah and prophets, or Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And by the way, you can just say Torah because the entire Torah, prophets, and Psalms are comprised of Yahweh's Torah teaching. But Torah and prophets, Torah, prophets, and Psalms works for me.
Yeah,
but
well, the first thing I did when I learned the truth, first thing I did was I took all these Bibles I had, and I didn't want anybody to get mixed up with those things, you know, and get poison all over their hands and in their mind. So I took it and I threw it in a dumpster. That's what I did.
Wow.
I won't allow anything like that in my home. I mean, I'm here to have 7 parties a year and relax one day of the week and get to know Yahweh a little better through his words.
It helps me to have access to some of them because of the fact that a lot of times in my writings I'll say, this is what these words mean. This is how they're conveyed in these other periodicals. and this is why I...
periodicals.
Yes, here are why I think in these periodicals you ought to be really concerned, because there appears to be no correlation between what they wrote and what God said.
Well, I think as long as you have a little poison sign on the front of them and say, don't touch, you know, that could,
you'd be fine. You'd be fine. That's basically what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, my bride is here, so I promised I'd take her out to dinner. I'm going to go do that now. I enjoyed doing this with you, though, Larry. Thank you. You make it
a lot more
fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you have a good Shabbat, you and the wife.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye. Good night.